And we are on air for Fan for Racing Radio. This is Monday night, September the 11th, and we're here for our Kansas 2 NASCAR race review and Hot Topic Sound Off. We're going to start in our first half hour with some short track news. Then we'll review the ARCA Menards Series race at Kansas Speedway. Brief update for the ARCA East and ARCA West Series as well. In our next half hour, we are going to cover the Truck Series race at Kansas. And afterward, Sal and I will comment on the media interview with NASCAR Xfinity Series winner, John Hunter Nemechek. He's the driver of the number 20 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. In the third half hour, race at Kansas along with the NASCAR Cup Series. Then you'll want to stay tuned for our Hot Topic Sound Off discussion with our Fan for Racing crew. And I think we'll have a full house with Jay, Andy, and Mike. All. So joining me shortly will be our co-host for tonight, and that is Sal Segala. He is back, so we'll look forward to chatting with him. And we'll get into our short track news while we wait. Sal's just getting home from work, so sometimes it takes a little while for him to get on and get tuned in here. But we'll keep an eye out for that, and I'll go ahead and cover some of the short track news that we have. I'm going to start over at Racing America, and there's a lot going on. ASA Stars National Tour Glass City 200 on Racing America this week. Races on Saturday, September the 16th, and it will be at Toledo Speedway. So if you don't have your subscription to Race, you'll want to get that so that you can watch that race. That's one of the big ones that's coming up this week. Also, Zach Prunty gets his first Slinger feature victory at Bernhagen and is crowned the champion. He held off a determined Mike Hill to capture his first career Uptown Motors Pro Late Model feature victory, while Jesse Bernhagen was crowned the 2023 Pro Late Model Track Champion. So a lot going on there. You can read about all of that over at that was at Slinger Speedway this week, and you can read about that over at Racing America as well. All right, let me see what else we've got. Anderson Speedway is going to host the First Responders Night on September 16th. So that's coming up this weekend. They will show the respect and appreciation for our first responders and their families by gaining free admission to all active first responders with a valid ID and a guest of their choice. So that's going to be at Anderson Speedway this weekend, and I'd really encourage folks to take part in that. All right, the third Dash for Cash signals the midweek program of 2023 at Thompson Speedway this weekend. Wednesday, as a matter of fact, that's midweek. And that's at Thompson Speedway on the Oval. And again, you can read all about the details of that race over at Racing America. I'm kind of bouncing back and forth here, keeping an eye for when Sal. Okay, Crump is searching for an elusive Glass 100 victory. That's going to be, he's one of the people that, of course, is entered for that race. And, combined Glass City 200 appearances, law and template, super late models, Kyle Crump has finished second four of those eight times. So you can read from about Kyle Crump over at Racing America and the upcoming Glass City 200. And then another feature that's over there is fresh off a test set. Bubba Pollard will complete the Glass City 200. And you can read that feature over at Racing America. I'm going to move over to Flow Racing because we can highlight There's the results from the 50 World 100 at Eldora Speedway. Eldora this past week, Austin O'Neill came out the winner. Jonathan Davenport finished in second. And again, you can see all the details of that race over those races, I should say, but the World 100 race specifically over at Flow Racing. They'll have a replay of that race available there. Late models are going to take over Knoxville Raceway this week. The $50,000 to win Knoxville Dirt Late Model Nationals is live on MAV TV on Flow Racing September 14th to 16th with the Lucas Oil Late Model Dirt Series. So that is a do-not-miss event out at Knoxville Raceway this weekend. Let's see, there's a storyline here. Kink and Jonathan Davenport's World 100 game plan. Hudson O'Neill, we've already outlined, he won that race. Jonathan Davenport came in second, but there's an article about Flow Racing if you want to check that out. Also, after the checkers, breaking down the Cars Tour barn burner, Matt Dillner and James Pike break down a barn burner with the Cars Tour at New River All-American Speedway in Jacksonville, North Carolina. That's available over at Flow Racing as well. And let's see. They also have an After the Checkers breaking down the World 100. Derek Tessinger and Kevin Kovac break down the storylines from that race if you want to check that out. And then Brendan Butterbean McQueen held off a last lap challenge from Ronnie Bassett Jr. to win the Cars Tour Carolina 125 at New River All-American Speedway, and there's a video about that over at Flow Racing as well. So check out all the racing from this past weekend. Matt Westfall wins his first USAC race in 17 years at Texarkana. And so also around the World 100 victory at Eldora, 50 years of relief for Mark Richards. You can read about that over at Flow Racing as well. So a lot of really good information available there. Of course, on Thursday, Jay and I will tell you about the upcoming races coming up this weekend as well. Moving over to short track scene, Jake Crum's side. This is in regard to the NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series from Hickory Motor Speedway. And Jake Crum believes there's some missing context when it comes to an incident that took place there. You can read about that over at Short Track Scene. Connor Hall sweeps the penultimate Langley race at Saturday, and that's the next our Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Series as well. Evan Shotko won at Berlin, the finale there. Brian Campbell is the champion. Bon Signor back in the Mod Tour title hunt with a Monadnock win. So you can read about all of these. That's the NASCAR Wheel and Modified Tour. Super Late Models, the 2023 Snowball Derby features a record purse and payouts. You can check that out over at under the Super Late Models over at Short Track Scene. And Carson Quapel, he came in second in the truck race this past week. He goes postal, closing on second Cars title. Again, you can read about that. And also with the Cars Late Model Stock Tour, Caden Honeycutt's varied schedule runs through Coastal. So you can check all that out over at Short Track Scene. Let me see if there's anything else. I think I've kind of caught everybody up there. Let me go over to the SRL. I was kind of waiting for Sal on this one because I know he follows the SRL. He was up in Stockton, I think, this past weekend as well. The Spear Southwest Tour Ally Breaks 100 is on September 16th at Irwindale Speedway. They're paying $7,333 to the winner, plus the Spear's Prolate and Modified Series is going to be racing. So that's pretty cool. The next event, let me see if I can get that event schedule. Okay. It looks like the next event is Friday, November 24th. That seems kind of late. This is for the Super Late Model Tour. And the Freedom Factory Super Late Model Race, and it'll be the weekend of the 24th and the 25th with the race on the 25th. So you'll want to check that out over at srlsouthwesttour.com. And they have their own TV over there as well. The Spears Modified is on MAV TV, and then they've got the Spears Racing TV over at that site as well, where you can catch a lot of these events. It's the eighth. Next race I was talking about is the 8th annual Bill Bigley Senior Memorial 128 at Freedom Factory on November the 25th. So Sal is here now. He might have more information about that. Welcome to the show, Sal, and welcome back.
Oh, good evening, Cheryl. Thank you.
We were just talking about the next national event for the SRL series, that Bill Bigley Senior Memorial. Is that one that you're planning to go to?
No, it's way out of my area.
Oh, is that? Okay.
Yeah, it's too far. I ain't gonna go all the way out there. I'm doing the one, we're having one Saturday over here at the Spear Southwest Tour.
Yeah, that's at Irwindale.
Yeah,
we talked about that when we came out.
Yeah, I don't do none of the nationals. They're too far out.
Away. But
yeah.
Didn't you go to Stockton?
Yeah, Stockton's not a national, though. Stockton's the Southwest Tour.
Yeah, I got it. I understand that.
I went to Stockton. I was going to say we have the Southwest Tour, then they have the National Tour.
Yes, I understand.
It's the same series, but they're just two different kind of like, I don't know, divisions, I guess you would say.
Divisions, that's right. They're two separate divisions. Absolutely. And then inside of that, you got the Super Late Models, the Pro Late Models as well. So Shepard is going to race for two in a row at Irwindale Speedway. There's a feature about that over at the SRLSouthwestTour.com site. And Nick Cooper hits the road again for Irwindale Speedway and the race that's taking place there this weekend.
Yeah, Buddy hasn't raced in. He only picks a few races now. Before, he used to run the tour full time, and then he ended up getting having a baby, stuff like that, and sponsorship money just wasn't there, so he had to cut back his schedule a lot. So now he just picks and chooses the races he wants to run. He likes running the big track. Like, he likes running the half mile, like Irwindale and Kern. He likes running. He doesn't like running Stockton and All America Speedway and those other tracks because they're small little short tracks and the wrecking is just it's out of hand. Just like in Stockton, only six cars finished, five cars on the lead lap. And there was 14 cars that started. It's just a crash fest. These guys are racing. I don't know where they have their head, but so that's kind of why Buddy, he just got tired of fixing race cars all the time.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the ARCA Menards series. They race this weekend out at Kansas Speedway. And Jesse Love, who has 9 wins on the season, Sal, didn't win this one, which was a matter of fact, he was out of the race kind of early. He ran into some early issues. But Connor Mosack breaks through for his first ARCA victory at Kansas Speedway this weekend. So it was a big weekend for that Joe Gibbs Racing team.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, Connor kind of won. Took the once after Jesse had the 12-30 on, and Connor just kind of took control from there, and that was basically it.
Yep, that was basically it. Mosack earned that General Tire Pole Award in his debut outing at Daytona and led a race high 25 laps, and was second behind Greg Van Alst. The following 4 starts, Mosack led 26 more laps and finished inside the top 10 each time, which included matching his career best performance of second at Pocono Raceway. So this was, he knew it was just a matter of time before he'd finally get that win. And it was this weekend in the Sioux Chief Fast Track 150 that he was able to come up with the victory.
Yes, it was. It was, like I said, it was a good, it was a dominant win and a solid win. And, you know, congratulations to Connor on the race win.
Okay, I'm going to pull up the race results, Sal, and we can go down the list here. I'll go down the list of the finishers, and then you can comment if you'd like. There were only 2 cars that finished on the lead lap. That's how dominating the performance was. It was Connor Mosack and Carson Quaffle who finished all 100 laps. Everybody else was a lap or more down. And then Tony Breidinger had 99 laps in. She finished 3rd. LeVar Scott in 4th. Jake Finch finished in 5th. Christian Rose, the last driver to finish with 99 laps, finished in 6th place. Finishing with 98 laps were Scott Melton, Dean Thompson, and Mandy Chick, one of the local favorites. And then Andy Jakaliwak put in 97 laps, rounding out the top 10. Any thoughts there with the top 10 finishers, Sal?
Yeah, it was sick to see the to see him almost lap the whole field. I mean, wow!
That's how dominating.
I couldn't believe it. Oh yeah, I mean, if that last caution would have come out, he probably might even lap Connor or Carson Quaffle too. Shoot, if he hadn't had any cautions, he'd have lapped himself. That's how fast he was. But yeah, basically 21 cars started the race and he lapped 19 of them. 19 of them. That's pretty amazing.
It is. It's really amazing. I will say for the ARCA Menard Series, that was the 17th race of the season, and now there will be 3 more races left for them to decide their championship. Let's see if we can pull up the points here and go over the points for the ARCA Menard Series.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to catch. There ain't nobody going to catch Jesse Love. Jesse Love's leading the points. 2nd is Andres Perez de Lara. He's 129 points back. And then from there, you got Frankie Munoz, who's 150 points back in 3rd. So there's just no way these guys can, none of these guys can catch him. And then 4th, you got Christian Rose. 5th, you got John Garrett. And then from there, then you go to 6th is A.J. Moyer. 7th is Brad Smith. 8th is William Sawalich. 9th is Tony Breidinger. And 10th is Jack Wood.
Yeah, and really only 5 of those drivers have finished all, well, 6 of those drivers have raced all 17 of those races. So it's really amazing. Jesse Love has the best stats, of course. His average start at 3.5, his average finish at 4.5. This weekend was not one of his best races. Like I said, he ended up finishing multiple laps down. And in fact, he finished, what place was that? 19th place, 76 laps down. So he had an issue early in the race, but it kind of, he still kept a dominant lead in the standings.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's got a monster lead. I mean, he just has a monster lead. I mean, like I said, there's nobody. Yeah, nobody's going to catch him. I mean, they were talking about that during the truck race, because he ran the truck race too, and they were talking about what went on with Arco Menard's race, and they said that it's just amazing the lead that he has.
It is. You know, one thing that I was noticing today when I was kind of preparing for tonight, seven drivers. Tanner Mozak is the seventh first-time winner in the Arca Menard Series this weekend. Greg Van Alst got his first win at Daytona. Then it was Tanner Reif at Phoenix. William Sawalich won his first race at Berlin Raceway. Tyler Ankrum, actually his first Arca Menard Series win was at Mid-Ohio this year. Luke Fenhouse won at Iowa Speedway for his first win. And Brett Cruz won at Illinois State Fairgrounds. Otherwise, Connor Mozak, of course, this weekend out at Kansas. Otherwise, it's been Jesse Love or William Sawalich are the only ones that have been multiple winners this season.
Yeah, William Sawalich, well, he's only got two, but other than that, Jesse Love has all the rest besides the drivers you just mentioned.
Correct. It's really been an amazing season. Three more races left. You got Bristol Motor Speedway coming up on September 14th, Salem Speedway on September 30th, and then the final race of the season will be at Toledo Speedway, the Shore Lunch 200, presented by CGS Imaging. That's on October the 7th, and that's when the season will end for the ARCA Menard Series. For the ARCA East, their next race is coming up. Whoops. I thought I had that here. Yeah, their next race is coming up this weekend. Actually, it's a combination race with the ARCA East and the ARCA Menard Series coming up this week. It'll be on Thursday night at Bristol Motor Speedway, September the 14th at 6 p.m. Eastern. It will be covered on Fox Sports 1. So it's another big weekend, this time at Bristol Motor Speedway, where we're going to have the ARCA Menard Series combination event, and then all three series are racing this weekend as well.
It's going to be a good weekend for racing.
Well, you know, this is the season finale for the ARCA East. So
already?
Yeah. They're going to end their season at Bristol Motor Speedway. And then for the ARCA Menard Series West, their next race is September 30th at 10:45 p.m. at All American Speedway, and that one will be available via live streaming on Flow Racing. But they have a few more races left on their schedule.
Yeah, we still got that. Yeah, then we still have the we'll start the Bullring in Las Vegas, and then Madera, and then Phoenix will be the last month.
Yeah, and then I will be at the Bullring again this year on October 13th for the Star Nursery 150, so I look forward to seeing you there, Sal. And then on October 21st is Madera Speedway, and November 3rd at Phoenix Raceway will be their season finale for the ARCA West. So let's hit the point standings for the ARCA East and the ARCA West while we have time.
Okay. Let's see. ARCA East. You still got William Sawalich, who's leading the points, and you got Luke Fenhouse in second. LeVar Scott in third. Zachary Tinkle in fourth. Let me see, Tim Monroe in fifth. And then from there, then we go to Dale Sherrar in sixth, Sean Hingerini in seventh, Rita Goulet in eighth, Brad Smith in ninth, and Jake Finch rounds out the top ten.
Now, this one's a little bit closer. It's between William Sawalich and Luke Fenhouse. They just have 20 points separating them. But William Sawalich has had an amazing season as well. He's got a 1.6 average start and a 2.1 average finish. That's pretty impressive in seven races.
Oh, yeah, it is. He has been having a good season. And he's been dabbling in another series also, too. So, you know, he's getting a lot of seat time this year, and I'm curious to see what he's going to run, what he has on his schedule for 2024.
Yeah, me too. I'm kind of looking forward to that too, to see what's up, what he's going to do there. Okay, and then I want to make sure we cover the standings for the ARCA West as well. So let's go ahead and cover that standings.
Okay, we still got
really
Sean Hingerani. Yeah, still got Sean Hingerani leading by 1 point over Landon Lewis. Trevor Huddleston in third. Tyler Rice in fourth. Bradley Erickson in fifth. And then from there, then you go down to sixth is Tanner Reif. Seventh is Todd Sousa. Eighth is Kyle Keller. Ninth is Eric Nascimento. And rounding out the top ten is Takuma Koga.
Yeah, this one's quite a bit tighter between the drivers. Plus, you've got a few more races to go as well. Like we mentioned, four more races left on the schedule here for the ARCA West. So I think it's going to be fun to see how this plays out.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it, like you said, to see how the season finishes for them with Sean and Landon going back and forth. And actually, 24 points back for Trevor isn't really that bad, especially when they get to Phoenix, where they're going to have a big car count. And the more cars they have, that means the more points it's going to be up for grabs. So if Trevor could get within 5-6 points of these guys, 10 points, it's going to be a battle, one heck of a battle for the championship. And even Tyler Reif, who's only 28 points out.
Yes.
He still has a good chance at the championship.
Yeah, this one is obviously the closest race of the three series. And so certainly the ARCA West is the series to keep your eye on as they go into these next four races. Okay. I know we're a couple minutes early, but let's go ahead and get into the NASCAR Truck Series. Again, all three series raced at Kansas Speedway this past weekend. For the ARCA West, this was an elimination race. For the NASCAR Truck Series, this was an elimination race at Kansas Speedway. But it was Christian Eckes who came in with the win at age 22, driving the number 19 Pete Napa Night Vision Chevrolet for McAnally Hildeman Racing. That was pretty cool to see. Charles Denneke is the crew chief for that team. It was his fourth victory in 87 NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series races, his third victory in 11th top 10 finish this year, and the first victory and sixth top 10 finish in eight races at Kansas. Taylor Gray finished in second, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at Kansas and his fifth top 10 in this season. Matt DiBenedetto finished third. He posted his second top 10 finish in four races at Kansas. And Taylor Gray, who finished second, was the highest finishing rookie of that race. And I just want to kind of go over the recap here of the Kansas Lottery 200. Christian Eckes grabbed the lead on the final restart and stole the victory on Friday night's Kansas Lottery 200 in the round of 10 elimination race in the Craftsman Truck Series. In a three-ride battle, for the lead against Corey Hyman, Zane Smith. Ecke's led only the final two laps to secure his third victory of the season, his first at Kansas and the fourth of his career. Following a restart with just two laps left, Ecke's took it three wide again with Corey Hyman, Zane Smith, and came out on top to get that series victory. Taylor Gray again was in second. Matthew Benedetto finished in third, but it wasn't quite what he needed. Corey Heim in fourth. Then it was Zane Smith rounding out the top five. The race was the cutoff for the next round of the playoffs, the round of eight. And despite finishing third, again, it wasn't enough for DiBenedetto. He misses the next round by just 5 points behind Ben Rhodes. Rhodes had a rough final stage and had to pit under green twice because of a vibration. He ended up finishing 25th. Teammate and three-time past champion Matt Crafton's night was even worse, though. Crafton began the race at the rear of the field. He had an incident in practice that forced the team to a backup. He worked his way through the field but bounced off the wall and had to make many pit stops for repairs. He ended the night in 33rd place, and he failed to advance to that next round. That was kind of a disappointment. Carson Hocevar, he won stage two. He finished second. He finished in sixth place, followed by Stuart Friesen, Nick Sanchez, who won the opening stage. Tyler Ankrum and Jake Drew closed out the top 10. The pole sitter, Chase Purdy, ended up in 14th. He was one lap down after pitting under green for a vibration. There were 18 lead changes among 11 drivers and 5 cautions for 34 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 111.960 miles per hour, and the margin of victory in this race was 0.363 thousandths of a second. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers, Sal?
Yeah, I never expected Chris Jenkins to come in and grab that win the way he did. Corey Heim looked like the driver that was going to do it. Even Carson Hocevar for a while, but Corey Heim just had the truck to beat. And you know, to see what ensued after that last restart. You know, Christian got in there and you know, kind of pushed Zane Smith out and Corey and Carson, and then, you know, then you see DiBenedetto, who needed the win in order to advance. You know, he already made the announcement that he's not coming back to Rackley War Racing next season. You know, so he was hoping to get that win, you know, to advance to the playoffs, you know what, and you know, and like you said, it would have been, it would have been nice for his resume, but just it wouldn't be, you know, he didn't get the win. Christian ended up with the win. Bill McAnally Racing, and you know, congrats to Christian on the win. Congrats to Bill for getting that win. And it was a really good, contested race.
It really was. It was amazing. I will say there were 34 of the 36 cars who finished the race, but only 13 cars finished on the lead lap and finished all 134 laps. The rest of them finished one or more laps down. Spencer Davis was out on lap one. He had a suspension issue right away. And then Mason Maggio was out on lap 117 because of an accident, but those were the only two that did not finish the race. So pretty interesting there. We talked about Jesse Love and how dominant he's been in the ARCA Menards Series. He finished 13th in this race at Kansas.
Yeah, you know, that's that was a good finish for him. You know, after the issues that he had on in the ARCA West race, So, you know, I'm sure he was happy for that. You know, excited for that finish. You know what, and to get the experience that he needs. You know, they're talking about where's Jesse going to go next year? You know, I don't think he's going to continue in the ARCA series. I think he's going to move up. They haven't made any announcements, you know, but I'm sure ARCA is not going to be the series we're going to see him in next year. I'm sure he's going to move up to probably the trucks. No announcements have been made. Nothing been said. So I guess just like everybody else, we just got to sit back and wait.
Yep, I agree with you. I think Jesse has certainly shown that he is talented enough to be in the truck series for sure. And I can't wait to hear which team he goes to. I've got an idea of which team it might be because he's part of that Toyota camp, but we'll have to kind of wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah, it's going to – I mean, with Kyle Busch moving to Chevy, you know what? I mean, Kyle mm-hmm. Busch Motorsports is out of the picture for him, which would have been a good fit for him, you know, since Kyle, you know, knows how to field the winning teams and, you know, and groom drivers like that. So, you know, it's just a matter of just, you know, like same thing with him, you know, just waiting, you know, and seeing what's going to – you know, what's going to transpire at the end of the season, what he's going to, you know, where he's going to end up.
That's true. That's true. Do you want to cover the points report here, Sal?
Yeah, let me see. The points we're looking at. Corey Heim leading the points. Christian Eckes in second. Carson Hocevar in third. Grant Infinger in fourth. Zane Smith in fifth. And then from there, then we go to Nick Sanchez in sixth. Ben Rhodes in seventh. Matt D. Benedetto in eighth. Matt Crafton in ninth. And Ty Majeski in tenth. But since we have the reset, let me see where Kasky has the reset right here.
Yeah,
he's got the whole here you go, he's got it right here. So he's got the driver reset is going to be Corey Heim is still going to be leading the series. 6 points back is going to be Christian Eckes. 6 points back is Grant Infinger. 8 points back is Carson Hocevar. 8 points back is Zane Smith. Ty Majeski is 14 points. Ben Rhodes is 17. And Nick Sanchez will be 24 points when they start the next round. So Nick Sanchez is sitting on the bubble of the eight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course it was Matt De Benedetto and Matt Crafton that did not move on to the round of eight.
Yeah, they got eliminated.
Yeah, so kind of sad to see that happen because Matt, of course, is a veteran of the sport, and a lot of us would have liked to have seen that. Same with Matt DiBenedetto. A lot of people would have wanted to see him advance on, but now we're just waiting to see where he goes next season.
Yeah, Matt Crafton talked about it. He already gave the hint that he's going to be coming back, you know, but he was too far behind the eight ball to really, you know,
mm-hmm.
to really, really make anything happen. I mean, the team tried, but you know what? At the end, you know, his truck just, you know, just wasn't.
Just wasn't what he needed.
Yeah.
Nick Sanchez. I've been really impressed with him this season, Sal.
Yeah, they're talking about him, and they're talking about how impressed they are, you know, how far he's going to go in the playoffs. But, you know, I think he still has another year or two left, you know, before, you know, he can really say, you know, he's a really solid championship contender. But it's going to be exciting, you know, to see him, you know, go through these playoffs. You know, I mean, he could be a dark horse, you know, and really come out, you know, and yeah, you know, and come out, you know, and you know, and really show these guys, you know, who's, you know. So, like I said, it's going to be exciting as the playoffs, continue.
Well, he's already clinched his place as the Rookie of the Year in the Truck Series. He's the only rookie that's in the playoffs this season. And I would say he's had some impressive runs. He was in the top 10 this past weekend at Kansas. We've got Bristol coming up this weekend, and it's going to be fun to see what he does there. Any early predictions for who's going to win at Bristol?
No, not really. It's going to be tough, you know. You know, you got a lot of good drivers in the series, and I don't know. It's going to be hard. Chances are, it might even be a non playoff contender. You know.
Yeah, it very well could be. You're right.
You know, but Zane Smith, I think, is really going to make a hard push now, you know, to try and grab, you know, a win before the playoffs are over.
Okay. Well, we'll have to see what happens. I'm going to go ahead and move on, Sal, now to our media interview with John Hunter Nemechek. He was the winner of the NASCAR Xfinity Series race at Kansas Speedway this weekend. He drives the number 20 for Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. And we've got his media interview here, and I want to make sure we play. It's 10 minutes and 55 seconds. If we get started early, we might be able to hear the entire interview. So let's go ahead and get started with that now, okay? And then we'll comment on it afterwards.
Okay. We are now joined by the winner of tonight's NASCAR Xfinity Series race, Team Check, driver of the number 20 in the Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. This is Toyota's 200th NASCAR Xfinity win, and of Toyota's 200 wins, Joe Gibbs Racing is responsible for 193 of those victories. So if you have any questions, please raise your hand, and we'll get a wireless mic to you. We're going to start from the back.
Hi, Todd Engel with the Kansas City Star. The broadcast shared a photo of celebrating with your dad. I think you're 8, 6, or 7. I was just wondering if you remember that, anything about that weekend at all, and how nice is it to be able to, you know, celebrate in the same place where you saw your dad have success?
This place has been a lot to my family. 2004, Dad was driving the Army car on Sunday. I think the Sellier 1 car on Saturday. I remember being a kid at the playground in the bus lot, playing on the playground. I remember going down the slide, and after he had won, we got shuttled to victory lane. Couldn't come in because there was alcohol being thrown, I remember, until after the fact. But it was awesome to be able to come to victory lane here with him in 2004, and then getting my first NASCAR Xfinity Series win here in 2018 as well. So this place has meant a lot to not only myself, but our whole entire family.
All right, we'll move on to Lee. SpencerCashFest.com. And when it comes to life structures, you've got a plateful. You know, you moved this year. You had a baby. Well, your wife did. But, you know, you have a new job coming up, right? You're running for a championship and then have all the stressors that come involved with that. How are you keeping that together?
To be honest with you, it's easier said than done. But for me, it's all about focusing on what I can focus on and controlling what I can control. My future, I didn't know what it held. I didn't know how the second baby was going to turn out, if we would be getting sleepless nights or actually getting some sleep, and then moving and everything else this year. It's definitely been a big year for myself and my family. But all in all, when it comes down to it, I have a great wife at home that helps take care of of Aspen and Penelope to let me live out my dream. And some great people around me at Joe Gibbs Racing that pushed me to be better every single day, that I have thoroughly enjoyed working with so far this year and over the last couple of years. And it's one big family. It's one big team. We do everything that we can to help each other out. And there's times where I may be stressed or one of the team guys may be stressed or whatever it may be. But when we get here to race weekend, it's full focus ahead on the task at hand. With the news coming out this week, I don't feel like it was a huge stressor for me. With myself and this team, we set a lot of goals coming into this year as a 20 team at Joe Gibbs Racing. And we still have to accomplish quite a few of those goals through the playoffs and trying to go get the championship. So a lot of work to be done. 2024, I can focus on 2024 when 2024 comes. But for right now, that's not even crossing my mind. It's full focus on this Xfinity Series championship, each and every race through the playoffs, and what it's going to take to go get this championship.
We'll come up to the front to Brooklyn, and then we'll move on. What is the momentum of winning the Xfinity race do for you going into tomorrow's race?
Well, I'm not racing tomorrow, so I'm actually on a flight home to today. But to answer that question in a way, the momentum that we've created today as the regular season finale cutoff, for us to be able to take this momentum and run with it into Bristol next week for the first round of the playoffs is definitely going to be something special and something that we can use to our advantage. It's all about building momentum in this sport.
All right, we're going to Zach.
Zach Strnadl on NASCAR.com. 6 wins this year for you. Obviously, we've talked about what this move meant for you to go back through the gamut of Trucks Xfinity Cup. You certainly expect to have some level of success, but 6 wins in the regular season, despite coming up short in the regular season championship, how do you assess what this regular season was for you in this 2010?
Oh, it's super special. We've had great success. We've definitely won our fair share of races. But I feel like we've also given up quite a few races that we probably should have won, and those will stick with you. But for us to have a great regular season, I've had great regular seasons in the past, and I've struggled a little bit in the playoffs for whatever reason that may be. But this year it's different mentality, different mindset, different team, different group. A lot of factors are playing into that. And we knew coming into the year that we would be a force to reckon with a team that was assembled around me at Joe Gibbs Racing, with myself. I believe in them, and I feel like they believe in me. We work very, very hard. There's a lot of time spent at the shop with myself and Ben and the engineers and all of the guys on the 20 team, and we pick each other's brain. We rely on each other, but we each have our single job to do. And atmosphere that we've created around the 20 team has definitely led to success this year. But at Joe Gibbs Racing, we're all one team. We all strive for success. And however that happens with having 2 teammates at the racetrack every weekend and the Xfinity Series, we rely a lot on each other. So the team dynamic is huge.
All right. And we will come to the front to Bob first, and then we'll move to the left side of the room.
About Chris Fox Sports. What's bigger, you're 43 points up on 9th for the cutoff or this first round, but you're also 34 points up on 5th right now in points. Just how, like, I know anything can happen, but what does a mean?
I think each and every one of those points means something, right? From the standpoint of having a big cushion, I guess I should say. When you go into the first round, you still want to go win races, and you have strategy going into the first round. But we've done some metrics on our end as far as If we don't win a race in the first round, kind of where we need to finish based off the playoff points that we have to advance, then the second round of an average finish through the round. So it's kind of crazy to look at those statistics, but I'm more of a numbers guy and statistics guy. So when it comes down to it, knowing kind of what you need to accomplish every single weekend, I guess you can say that those points will give you a cushion if you have a bad week. But if you have a bad week in the playoffs, normally that's not very good. So no bad weeks.
All right, we'll move over to Harry.
Hi, Harry Loomis, Loomis NASCAR. Congrats on the win, y'all. You know, you've been doing really well at mile and a half tracks here. I think you've had top tens every single race. You know, looking at the playoffs, you've got Texas, you've got Vegas, you've got Homestead. How important is it, or what can you learn from today to try to add some more bonus points going into trying to get to Phoenix?
Man, I just love Kansas. Most of the mile and a half that we've been to have been really successful. Joe Gibbs Racing as an organization has been strong at mile and a half racetracks. We've been strong at short tracks. We've been strong at pretty much every place this year, which has been an amazing attribute to the team. So for myself, the mile and a half program is definitely something special. So being able to race here in Kansas, and then we have Vegas, Homestead, Texas, those all the mile and a half, I think, that we go to for the rest of the year, it just puts a smile on my face. You can never say that you're going to go win every mile and a half race, right? But we know that we have the cars to do so, but the hard work doesn't stop. We have to continue to improve every single day and every single week.
Cool.
Cole Kusuma with the Arizona Republic. Congratulations, John Hunter. You mentioned you're a big numbers and statistics guy. Six wins, most laps led. What statement does this send to the competition going into the playoffs, in your opinion?
I guess we're a force to be reckoned with. I mean, it means a lot to me to be, I guess, the top seed going into the playoffs. But then again, the top seed doesn't mean very much if you don't advance. So it's all about advancing.
We have any additional questions for John Hunter? All right, give him like 30.
I didn't remember. Did you get the 200th Xfinity win for
Toyota? Oh, yes, for JGR.
So you got the double-double, right? And
yeah.
I mean, I know TRD has been so supportive of your relationship. It has to mean a lot to get this milestone as well.
It does. Being able to get 200 wins for Toyota on the Xfinity side is something special. I think what makes it even more special is after my year in Cup in 2020, the opportunity that I had to go truck racing with Kyle Busch, it wouldn't happen without KB or Toyota TRD and the internals there. And then to go with Xfinity Racing, it wouldn't happen without Coach Coy and a lot of others that were involved in bringing me over to JGR as well. So as well as Toyota TRD. So they mean a lot to me. I'm glad to continue my relationship with them for the future, and hopefully we can win a lot more races together.
Any additional questions? All right. Thank you so much, Sean Hunter.
Thank you, guys.
Congratulations.
Okay, Sal, your thoughts about what John Hunter had to say here?
Yeah, I mean, he has to be satisfied, you know, with the position that he's in, you know, as far as, you know, with how his season's going. Plus, you know, he's real, how do you say it, real comfortable now because now he knows where he's going to be at next season. So, you know, of course, you know, you're going to hear, you know, positive things from him, especially, like I said, how he's, you know, how well he's doing this season. You know, it's neat to hear him, you know, talk about, you know, the way he's talking about Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, give him a lot of the credit for this because, you know, they're the ones that pushed him to where he's at right now. And, you know, it's just a testament, you know, to the organization. But, you know, also, you know, I'm sure having the kids now, you know, and the wife, you know, really settled him down a lot, you know, and made him really, you know, realize, you know, how important, you know, life is rather than just go out and be a knucklehead all the time. You know,
well,
so it's just
But it's a stressor, too. Those are all stressor events that were outlined there. You know, a new home,
yeah.
He's a new baby, you know, a new team he's preparing for. So that's a lot of...
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, when you have a good supporting cast, you know, it makes
absolutely.
It easy. You know, I'm not saying, the position that he's in right now, you know, with the team, you know, where they're at, you know, and then plus, you know, with having a wife, you know, and stuff like that, you know, I mean, it just, it makes, you know, it makes, I'm not saying it makes life easier, it just makes life more easier to
transition to deal with what comes.
Yeah, I'm trying to look for something here.
Because
JC doesn't have it, but he knows he's going to be making a big transition next year, but you know what? He's more focused on taking care of business this year, you know, and pleasing. That championship means a lot. He's seen a lot of drivers and what can happen, you know, by,
mm-hmm.
you know, having this kind of season and not being able to finish it off. You know, I'm sure he looks back at what happened with Noah Gregson last year, you know, and, you know, Noah wasn't able to, you know, to finish it off, you know, and grab that championship. You know,
well,
so I'm sure.
He seems super focused for sure this season.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's taking first things first and dealing with what he has to deal with today, kind of the attitude. And I think that's going to be great. But I do look forward to seeing what he does in the 24, I'm sorry, in the 42 next season at Legacy Motor Club and racing with Eric Jones.
I know. That team is a hot mess. I mean, you know what?
Well, Eric had a good run this week.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, that's like Josevar had a good run. You know, a lot better run than Noah ever had in that car. You know, was Noah ready for Cup? No, Noah was not ready for Cup. You know, is Josevar
mm-hmm.
ready for Cup? Josevar is not even close to being ready for Cup. Did Josevar have a good run and probably have some luck on his side? Probably did. You know, went out there, you know what, it was a one-off race, you know what, and, you know, and you know, and taking over that seat, you know, for the one race, you know, you're a lot more comfortable, you know, than knowing that you have a whole season, you know, you have to prove yourself, especially after not winning a Can-Am West Championship when you had it in the bag, and then you had an Xfinity Championship go and be the dominant driver, and then now you come into, you know, a team like this. You know,
yeah.
And John Hunter Nemechek is more, and John Hunter's coming in more, you know, more relaxed and more, you know,
focused.
I just more, yeah. I mean, yeah, focused. I'm not saying you know, Noah's probably focused too, but I just think that the word I'm trying to find is more mature.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to find. Mature.
True.
He's coming in
yeah.
more mature. And you could tell
well,
by
he's got his family.
I mean,
he's further
I mean,
along
to his interview
life
too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but
yes,
to his interview, you know, he's thanking everybody. You know, he's appreciative. You know, and you
right.
know, and he knows that these guys gave him the tools to get where he's at. You know, as to like I said, you know, when you look at other drivers that are making the transition, they're not saying the right things. They're not doing the right things. And this
mm-hmm.
isn't something from his PRF. This is something from him because this is coming after a race. So he's just getting out of the
right.
car. So it's not like he sat down. His publicist said, okay, you know what? Now we're going to have, you know, it's media day. You know, this is what you're going
right.
to say. You know, he's getting out
right.
of the car, you know, and this is John Hunter Nemechek uncut.
Yeah, but
you know,
I think.
And you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say something, too, before we run out of time here.
Okay,
I think
boy,
one of the reasons they're bringing – I know. One of the things we're going to do is – they're doing is bringing John Hunter Nemechek, who has the Toyota background, with him when he comes over to Legacy. I think that's going to be an asset to Legacy Motor Club. And as you mentioned, he's got more maturity. So I think it's all going to be a positive. But we do have to move on to the Xfinity series.
Otherwise, we're going to have about 3 or 4 minutes extra. But, I mean, it's true what you say, you know, about, you know, with Legacy going to Toyota and John Hunter Nemechek coming over with them. You know, he's bringing all those resources. You know, and Norton.
Absolutely.
You know, I just think he's more mature. And maturity, I think it plays a big role. You know?
I agree with you. I hit the wrong link here. Okay, we're going to go to the NASCAR Xfinity Series and talk about John Hunter Nemechek's win there, but we'll also cover some of the other finishers and the recap of that race. It's the Kansas Lottery 300. John Hunter drives the number 20, Ty Barker Fire and Safety Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing, and Ben Bashore is his crew chief. I think that's a good matchup with John Hunter Nemechek. It's his eighth victory in 93 NASCAR Xfinity Series starts, his sixth victory and career high finish this season, his 19th top 10 finish this season. It's also his second victory and third top 10 finish in three races at Kansas Speedway. Brandon Jones finished second post-top 10 finish in 9 races at Kansas and his 7th top 10 finish of this season. Sheldon Creed finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in 2 races at Kansas. And Parker Retzlaff, who finished 11th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And they mentioned this in the interview. This is the 200th NASCAR Xfinity Series victory for Toyota. A total of 149 races were won with the Toyota Camry body, and 51 have been won in the Toyota GR Supra. Of Toyota's 200 Xfinity Series wins, Joe Gibbs Racing is responsible for 193 of those victories. So that's pretty cool to see happening as well. And I know John Hunter was honored to be the driver to make that happen. There were no mixed feelings on Parker Kligerman's part. He was really happy to see John Hunter Nemechek get that victory on Saturday in the Kansas Lottery 300. Had the other driver won, it would have meant that he would not have made the playoffs. So it was really good that if Brandon Jones had won, it would have meant that Parker Kligerman would not have made it into the playoffs, but Brandon Jones would have. So he was real happy to see John Hunter get that victory. Brandon Jones came up just shy of the win, in which he needed to have in order to make the playoffs. He earned his best finish of the season in second. Sheldon Creed finished again third, his third podium finish in the last 4 races. Parker Kligerman came in fourth, scoring enough points to clinch that final spot into the postseason. Austin Hill rounds out the top 5, winning the regular season championship. Josh Berry placed sixth. Then it was Brett Moffitt, Derek Krause, Joe Graff Jr., and Kaz Grala finishing the top 10. There were 7 lead changes among 5 drivers, 10 cautions for 49 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 109.256 miles per hour. The margin of victory in this race was 7.521 seconds. So it was a pretty dominant finish for John Hunter Nemechek. He did everything he possibly could to go after that championship. But Austin Hill had too good of a finish for John Hunter Nemechek to earn it. But he did everything perfect.
Yeah, there was no one going to get that win from John Hunter Nemechek. He was definitely the top of the field. But, you know, they talked a lot about him, but they talk about Austin Hill, you know, and just, you know, just the, you know, driver that he was this year. You know, he was just, it's you know, they said, you know, it's like the first two stages, you know what, he was setting himself up for the last stage, you know, to get the, you know, the good finishes that he got all season. But, you know, congrats to John Hunter Nemechek, because I'll tell you, that was sure was one heck of a dominating run that he had. There was no one going to catch him. I mean, he was in his own zip code.
Yep, he certainly was. Any other thoughts about the top 10? Because we see some unusual names up in that top 10.
Yeah, I guess you do. Brandon Jones, I thought was going to make a run for it for a while there, but he just never. Brandon Jones never had the car, you know. You know, Josh Berry could continue with his top 10 finishes. Of course, eighth is Derek Krause, you know, who finished eighth. You know, congrats on that finish. I know they talked about Derek a little bit. You know, then, and I know you're talking about is Joe Graff Jr., you know, who got a ninth place finish, you know.
He was driving the 19 for Joe Gibbs this weekend.
Yeah, you know, that finish just goes back to Josevar at his finish with the 42 car, you know. You know, I mean, congrats to Joe Graff on the finish. And, of course, Kaz Grala, you know, finishing 10th. But Parker Retzlaff, the highest finishing rookie, he got a lot of airtime this week. You know, they talked a lot about him, you know, and the run he was having. You know, he was up there, you know, in the, you know, top five for a while. You know, he was back and forth. And, you know, but like I said, John Hunter Nemechek just had the, I mean, there was nobody to catch him.
Yeah, that is so true. Parker Retzlaff was one of the 11 drivers that finished all 200 laps of the race. There were 32 cars that finished the race, but the rest of the cars were all a lap or more down. A few people did have incidents. Kyle Weatherman was out on lap 19 because of an accident. Sam Mayer had an accident, taking him out on lap 20. Cole Custer, who I thought was one of the cars that could have contended, he ended up out due to an accident on lap 60. Sammy Smith, another favorite pick for the win, he was out on lap 97 due to an accident. Daniel Hemric was actually running but was multiple laps down. Blaine Perkins had a big issue that took him out on lap 140. But all the rest of the cars did finish the race. Any thoughts there, Sal?
Yeah, well, we just went over the drivers and stuff.
I felt bad for Riley Earp.
Yeah, I know. He, he was – They worked and worked and worked on that car. I mean, there was nothing more they could do to that car to try to get him. You know, he was close. He was like within 13 points, you know, getting in. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That right front, you know, they just had to keep coming in and fixing it. You know, and they could never get the speed that they needed out of the car. And, you know, but, I mean, you really had to feel bad for him, you know, not making the
– Yeah.
You know, the playoffs, you know, he had a really good season this year. Still looking for that first win.
He was focused on trying to win that race. And I kept thinking to myself, I wonder if this is kind of a lesson learned for him. He's got to focus on just beating who he needs to beat in order to make it into the playoffs. He didn't necessarily have to go after the win. He could have gotten in on points. But he hadn't. You know, it was a mechanical problem with the car that kind of held him back. Justin Allgaier, too, he ended up finishing 18th despite losing the whole back of his car.
Yeah, they're kind of cracking. they're cracking jokes about that, talking about, you know, back in the day, you know, that the teams would set those on tracks like this. You know, they put only a few bolts in the backfield fall off because when that back piece fell off, the car went faster. But now NASCAR requires them, when that back piece falls off, to put it, you know, they have to put something back on, which is the piece back. But they're kind of joking, yep. You know, making jokes, you know. Dale Jr. was talking about that and saying, you know, yeah, I remember when the teams used to sparingly put them on and then they have somebody going and running the back of them and it would fall off. And then all of a sudden, you know, now they're, you know, they're faster than the rest of the field.
Exactly. Now, this was a season finale for the Xfinity Series. But let's go ahead and cover the points here for the Xfinity Series.
Yeah, so the points now are John Hunter Nemechek leads the points. Austin Hill is in second. Justin Allgaier is in third, 23 points behind John Hunter Nemechek. Cole Custer's in fourth.
Yeah, this is the reset points, right?
Yeah, this is the reset points. I had to go to NASCAR.com because, Chase, you don't have the points.
Okay.
And then Sam Mayer is sitting in fifth. Chandler Smith is in sixth. Josh Berry is in eighth. And Sheldon Creed is holding up the last spot. And then from there, then we go down to Sammy Smith and Jeb Burton are ninth and tenth. And then from there, Daniel Hamrick and Parker Klingerman.
Right. So Daniel Hamrick made it in, Parker Klingerman made it in. And then, you know, Sheldon Creed has had a really good run. He was kind of borderline, you know, for a while there. And then these runs that he's had these last few races have really propelled him to be in that top eight now. So I think a lot of kudos go to that team for getting him in a good position for the next round.
Yeah, I mean, really nobody's, well, because now we're starting the new round, so, you know, it's going to be curious to see what happens because John Hunter Nemechek, 43 points to the good. Actually, 46 points to the good from Daniel Hamrick. No, 47 points to the good from Parker Klingerman. You know, it's
right.
Almost, you know, looking good. You know, Sammy Smith is 43. So John Hunter Nemechek and Austin Hill are kind of looking good, you know, as far as, you know, making it to the next round, you know. As long as they don't have, you know, a major, you know, two DNFs or something like that. But as long as they can stay consistent and finish, you know, in the top five, top ten, you know, this would be going on. But, yeah, right now outside of the top eight is Sammy Smith, Jeb Burton, Daniel Hamrick, and Parker Klingerman, you know, with, like you said, you know, Riley Herbst just, well, not barely, but Riley Herbst was a long way out, you know, from making it in, you know. Him and Parker Klingerman, you know, were going back and forth. But Parker did what he had to do. You know, they were talking about as long as he could finish seventh or better, you know, that he's going to lock himself in, you know. And towards the end of the race, he had a close call with, I can't remember what driver it was, where they got together coming up into the front stretch. And Parker kind of clipped him in the back and almost ended up in the wall and out of the – and out of the playoffs, and out of the race, you know, which would have put him laps back enough for you know, but I mean, they worked on Riley's car, you know, they had to, you know, they had to try, you know, keep him, you know, never know what happens, you know.
Okay, they had to keep him in the game for sure, a lot could have happened that could have still put him in the playoffs. But, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. There's several races that are coming up here on the schedule. The next three races are going to be their round of 12. So they'll be racing at Bristol this weekend. Then they've got Texas Motor Speedway September 24th, and Talladega will be their elimination race. Hold on. Yeah. No, wait a second. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong thing here. Let me go to the Xfinity Series. Yeah, it should be Bristol this week. Then they've got Texas, and then Charlotte on the 7th will be their elimination race before they start the round of 8 at Las Vegas on October the 14th. So, yeah, there's a lot to look forward to here with these guys, and it's going to be fun to see.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Of course, the racing at Bristol starts this week on Thursday. So with the Truck Series, Xfinity Racing on Friday night, and, of course, the Cup Series on Saturday night. But we're going to go ahead and move on now to the Cup Series. The NASCAR Cup Series race at Kansas, the Hollywood Casino 400, was won by Tyler Reddick, age 27, in the number 45 Money Lion Toyota for 2311 Racing and crew chief Billy Scott. It was his fifth victory in 138 Cup Series races, his second victory and 13th top 10 finish this season, and his first victory and fourth top 10 finish in 9 races at Kansas. Denny Hamlin posted his 14th top 10 finish in second place in that's 31 races at Kansas, his 13th top 10 finish this season. And Eric Jones finished third, posting his sixth top 10 finish in 15 races at Kansas. Ty Gibbs was the highest finishing rookie. He finished in 14th place. And so for the review of this race, again, it was Tyler Reddick. He made a bold move to the front of the field in overtime. Tyler Reddick left his car owner frustrated at the end of the second Cup Series race, playoff race at Kansas Speedway. He did, however, beat the Joe Gibbs Racing driver, Denny Hamlin, and brought the win to 23-11. The margin of victory was 0.327 seconds. Excuse me. Hamlin led 63 laps and was more than 2 seconds ahead of Reddick when playoff driver Chris Buescher blew a right rear tire on lap 261 of the scheduled 267 laps. That caused the ninth and final caution of the race. So behind Denny Hamlin, in second, it was Eric Jones. It was a great finish for the number 3 and Legacy Motor Club. Then it was Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, and the pole winner, Christopher Bell, along with Brad Keselowski and Alex Bowman to round out the top 10. Hamlin was leading the race and pulling away when that late caution came out for Chris Buescher, and the field pitted with a mix of strategies. Reddick started the race in fifth place. He took the lead coming to the white flag and held on to win the race. He took that deep dive, and that's what got him around the rest of the other cars. It was only 2 laps that he led on the day, but there were some playoff drivers who had problems this weekend. Martin Truex Jr. wrecked on lap 4 after a tire went down. He ended up out of the race. He ended up in 36th place. William Byron spun out on lap 64. He did not hit anything, and he was able to continue on. He ended up finishing in 15th place. Bubba Wallace also had a tire go down while running second during stage 2, and he ended up breaking the co-link. That cost him multiple laps, and he finished in 32nd place. Chris Buescher lost a tire with less than 10 laps to go. He finished in 27th place. Stage 1 was won by Kyle Larson. Stage 2 by Brad Keselowski. There were 19 lead changes among 10 drivers and 9 cautions for 45 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 125.212 miles per hour. your thoughts, Sal, on the top 10 finishers here. Two of them, only two of those top 10 were non-playoff drivers.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch this race. We were in we were at the stadium, but you know, I did read up on some of it, and I guess there's a little bit of controversy about the last restart, and they said Danny Hamlin looked like he held up the field to let Tyler Reddick, you know, get out, you know, get a good lead out in front, you know, to get the win. You know, especially,
yeah,
you know, like you said, you know,
that
being his
interview.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, of course, you know, that's his team, you know. So, you know, I mean, he's locked into the playoffs, you know. You know, it's a confidence booster. Plus, it's a little bit extra for the sponsorship and for everything that goes along with 2311 Racing. So you kind of wonder, you know, how true that is. And if it is true, I'm sure NASCAR is going to look into it. And, I mean, they haven't said anything, but I don't know if there could be a possibility of a penalty because of that. You know, dictating
we'll
the outcome of a race.
Penalties usually come out in Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll see what happens. Hamlin says that, you know, he was looking behind him instead of looking in front of him, and he felt like he gave up the lead. By doing that, he felt he should have been more forward thinking than backward thinking, and I would agree with that. But I hear what you're saying. There was an issue between Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott as well, but I don't think Chase Elliott wasn't happy with Kyle Larson. But that's been kind of an ongoing thing with Hendrick Motorsports.
Oh yeah, that's been all season long. You know, that's something that Rick Hendrick needs to take care of. You know, And after their last incident, I'm sure everybody thought it was over, but it's obvious to see, you know, that it's not. You know, you got two young drivers, you know, one that's frustrated he didn't make the playoffs, you know, and the other one, you know, who had a dominating year, you know, after coming back from being suspended for almost the whole year, you know, and you know, mm-hmm. we're taking a chance on him, you know, and you know, which driver is the franchise driver, you know, which is the go-to driver. And while those two were having their issues, you know, William Byron went out, you know, what had really made a statement, you know, on the, you know, the driver that he is. You know, he made a huge statement, you know. What he finished? He finished 15th on Sunday. But, you know, but then, like I said, then you go back, you know, to the, you know, to the, you know, it's good to see Eric Jones, you know, get another top five, you know, for, you know, Legacy Motorsports. You know, which just goes to tell you more and more, you know, I mean, you know, is a team really going to be competitive for John Hunter Nemechek next year or not? I mean, you know, like I said, Carson Osler had a good run in the car, you know, that 42 car. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens next year, you know, with that. You know, Joey Logano continues, you know, to be, a threat, you know, top five. Kyle Busch, you know, finishing second, and Christopher Bell starting to come around like he did last year towards the end of the season. You know, Christopher Bell, you know, had made that, you know, that's he made that charge, you know, to get into the playoffs. You know, so, you know, Christopher Bell, maybe he's just one of those, you know, those drivers, you know, that likes to make his push, you know, at the end of the season. And then Brad with another top 10, you know, it's good to see Brad Keselowski, you know, having the runs and having, yeah, such a horrible season last year. You know,
yeah,
so, I mean, it's really
deserving.
Yeah, it's a breath of fresh air to see him, you know, having the season he's having this year.
Yep. Okay, there were 33 cars of the 36 that were running on the when the race ended. Of those, only 24 cars finished on the lead lap. The rest were multiple laps down. Three cars had incidents taking them out of the race. Martin Truex Jr., that incident took him out on lap three. Harrison Burton and J.J. Yaley were out early because of the damaged vehicle policy. Harrison Burton on lap 175 and J.J. Yaley on lap 212. But other than that, everybody finished the race. But, yeah, what about Martin Truex Jr., the regular season champion, now below, now in jeopardy?
Yeah, you know, I was, I mean, it just shows you, you know what, I mean, even with all those playoff points, you know what,
he's had two mulligans already in the first two races of the season.
Exactly.
So it's not looking good for him. And Bristol is not one of his best tracks, so it's going to be interesting to see if they can kind of pull it all together, and see if he can't go after that victory at Bristol. But, man, he's got a big hole to dig out of at this point.
Yeah, they're talking about.
He can settle in on points.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And, you know, they're talking about at the beginning, you know, how, you know, when the playoffs started for them, you know, how, you know, he was, you know, one of the favorites, you know, and he was – the season he's having, look at how good, you know, and now all of a sudden, you know, he's below the cut line.
Yeah, it's a little disconcerting, to say the least, because you're right. He had 36 playoff points built up. William Byron also has those 36 playoff points, he's had better finishes in the first two races in the round of 16. Let's go ahead and cover the points. We're almost out of time here. So
the points, Kyle Larson's leading the points, Tyler Reddick's in second, Danny Hamlin's in third, William Byron's in fourth, Brad Keselowski's in fifth, Ryan Blaney's in sixth, Kyle Busch is seventh, and Ross Chastain rounds out the top eight. And then from there we go down to Chris Buescher in ninth, Christopher Bell in 10th, Joey Logano in 11th, Kevin Harvick in 12th, and so far with the exception of Chastain, Martin Truex is below the line, but Bubba Wallace, Ricky Stenhouse, and Michael Madell are all right where, according to the analysts, right where they're supposed to be, not making it to the next round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Martin Truex Jr. is able to do at Bristol.
McDowell's on a definite. He needs a win.
Yeah,
him, Stenhouse, and Bubba all need wins. They're too far out. But you know, Chastain, you know, still holding on strong up there. You know, Blaney's up there in sixth and. Of course, Kyle Larson.
Mm.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see.
Those top three have been very strong so far this in the opening part of the round of 16. William Byron has a chance to be in that final four, but those top three look like they're going to be hard to beat throughout the playoffs. We'll see how it continues to play out. Any surprise? You anticipate any surprises?
Kyle Larson and Tyler Reddick already locked in with their wins.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I would still like to see Brad Keselowski get a win before the season's over. You know, just beat Kevin Harvick's last season. I'd like to see Kevin go all the way to the final four too. You know, just
mm-hmm.
being his last season. It's just going to be hard because Kevin's so far down him and Truex, but Truex is just really he dug himself up a bad hole.
Yep, we'll have to see what happens. So you're going to be at Irwindale this weekend, Sal?
Yeah, I'll be there with the SRL series.
Okay, that'll be fun, and. I will look forward to hearing about it next week when we come back on for our review of Bristol.
Yeah, it should be a good race. We got a good solid field out there, so I mean, I'm looking forward to it and getting back out to the track again.
All right.
Stockton
well,
was
good
nice.
To
it
have
was really,
you back.
Yeah,
oh,
Stockton
yeah,
was really
you went
nice.
To Stockton.
We didn't have the heat that we're supposed to that we usually get. So it made for a really nice evening of racing. And then Labor Day weekend, so we went up and did some stuff. But either way, I know you guys have a show to go. It's already top of the hour.
It is. But thanks for being here. It's good to have you back, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next Monday night.
All right. Good night, everyone. Have a safe weekend, and glad the football is finally back. Good night.
You and my brother both.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Al. All right. We are at the top of the hour. That means it's time for NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And let's go ahead and bring everybody into the queue. Jay Huseman, I know, is here. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. And I just caught the tail end with you and Sal. Hot topic just to start. Good news is Michael McDowell, Ricky Stenhouse could win at Bristol, and that's what's coming.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I was kind of poking him to see if he'd come up with any surprise wins, but he didn't give it to me. But that's exactly it. You never know what could happen. Also joining us today is Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hi there, Sharon. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. And looking forward to our Hot Topics discussion tonight. And also joining us tonight is Michael Orzel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Oh, good evening. Glad to be back. Sorry I missed Thursday, but those chemtrails aren't going to spray themselves.
Okay, well, it's good to have you back. And I'm going to let you go ahead and open up our Hot Topic Sound Off discussion here tonight.
I'm glad you did, because I often get accused of being a homer for a certain driver, and my impartiality and objectivity is often impugned. So I wanted to bring this topic up to make sure that I got it before Jay did. But anyway, Danielle Trotta came in real hot on SiriusXM today regarding Chase Elliott's incident with Kyle Larson. If you'll recall, the final pit stop cycle going into the overtime at the end of the Kansas race, Larson was basically in the middle of three wide coming out of pit road. He got pushed out by Brad Keselowski, which in turn caused Larson to get into the side of Chase Elliott and push Elliott just about into the grass coming off of pit road. It appeared that Elliott didn't know about the Keselowski part of that equation, and he ended up pulling up and dooring Kyle Larson on the way out of pit road. Well, Danielle Trotta kind of came in hot on Chase Elliott today, and she said on SiriusXM, quote, Chase's behavior was totally unacceptable in a year where his decision-making has been questionable to the point of being suspended, unquote. I'm just interested to get everybody's take on this topic here, because it's another Chase Elliott judgment on-track action kind of incident in a year where we've had a couple of those.
Okay, and Andy, we'll go to you for the first commentary on that.
You know, I haven't even seen the race yet, so it's hard for me to really comment on the incident, but from what it looked like, there was contact on pit road after a pit stop, and Elliott was frustrated by that, and, you know, you can understand the frustration to some degree, but, you know, they are teammates, and you know, I'm sure that the executives at Hendrick Motorsports, namely Rick Hendrick and Jeff Gordon, probably didn't appreciate the fact that he went up and made contact with his teammate after they exited pit road. So, you know, I don't know. It's just been such a down year for him in general. You know, obviously he injured himself. He missed some races. That didn't help things as far as their season went. He then got suspended for right-rearing somebody intentionally, you know, then failed to win a race. It's just, it's not been their year, you know, and that happens to everybody at some point, you know. And I think those frustrations are just spilling over onto the racetrack. And this isn't the first time that he and Larson have had history together. I think it was Auto Club Speedway a year or two ago where they raced hard and they made some contact and one of them got into the fence and, you know, they weren't too happy about that either. So this isn't the first time these guys have gotten together, not the first time they've been frustrated with each other. I think that it's probably time to sit them down and have a lengthy discussion about their feelings toward one another and where to go from here, because that's not the way teammates should race each other. Especially, you know, I know the 9 might be in the owner playoffs, but the 5 car, I think, can actually contend for a championship. So, you know, I think that you have to show your respect toward a teammate, especially one that's out there vying for wins and championships, while the 9 car really hasn't been doing that. So, yeah, it's just been a tough year for them. The frustration is evident, but I think it's time that the team steps in and has some discussions internally. Certainly not something the rest of us need to know about, but I would hope that they'll sit down and discuss this, because it's time that, you know, Elliott, you know, realize the severity of his actions, and also, you know, Larson too. I mean, you know, it doesn't do either one of them any good to be getting into each other and having these issues. So I think they need to try to put whatever issues they have behind them and try to work for the greater good of, you know, bringing home a title for that team.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts.
Well, I was on the road today, so I was listening to SiriusXM, and I heard that interview or that segment with Danielle Trotta and Larry McReynolds, and she definitely was fired up about it. I don't know if I heard Sharon's voice in my head in one of those where I know you get fired up on occasion. She was pretty wound up. Larry Mack kind of agreed with her, just wasn't as adamant, which is where I kind of fall. And to go back to what Andy said there, they had the problem at Auto Club. Larson went to make a pass, moved up. Chase Elliott was coming and faster at the time because was already to the Kyle Larson's outside. They got together. Larson said he didn't see him. Then, though, came Watkins Glen, where Kyle Larson made a dive ball move, got to the inside, but ended up sliding up and not holding it into Chase Elliott, pushed him out of the groove, and I think Elliott lost 2 or 3 positions with that. In that situation, Hendrick Motorsports, both Jeff Gordon and Rick Hendrick, I believe, kind of backed Elliott and saying, Larson, you know, I know you're going for the win, you're here for your team, but you also hurt your teammate. I think in this case, they better back Kyle Larson. My biggest issue with the incident was you got that on pit road. Again, Kyle moves up on pit road, has to move because he sees he's coming up on Brad Keselowski. He just pulled out slower. He just pulled out in front of him. Larson needs to make room. They're 2 or 3 wide on pit road. Larson moves up. Elliott's there. They bump. Get onto the front edge road. Get it. Chase Elliott doesn't have the whole picture. Gets upset. They use the word door slam. Made contact. Okay, expressed his frustration. From what I've heard, post-race, went to the car, got his head in the window, and had a discussion with Kyle Larson. Don't know how he did, what it was about. Even if you get to the point where you say, okay, maybe I shouldn't have been as upset, I didn't know all the facts. When Bob Pockrass interviewed him, Chase Elliott acted like he didn't even know what the question was about. He asked, you know, what was the message you were trying to send? And he's like, nothing. I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing between us. You can't deny it. I mean, people saw it, and you know it's there, okay? To try and play it off like that, to me, was a little, I say, embarrassing. I mean, because you can't deny it. People saw it. Larry McReynolds is the one that kind of went down the road of go back to 2020. Chase Elliott, as we all know, NASCAR's most popular driver when it comes to the fan vote and the fans. Champion. The face of HMS. The next year, Kyle Larson gets brought in, wins 10 races, wins the championship. Since then, if you look at the two teams, Kyle Larson overall has been better. Last year in 2020, Chase Elliott did have more wins and a little bit better. But look at this year again. Kyle Larson's up there contending for the driver's championship and whatnot. And then this year alone, like Danielle Trotta said, and I know Mike had put a comment in there, it's not that NASCAR needs to suspend or get involved in this incident. She's saying he's made bad decisions this year to include the situation with Hamlin, which did get him suspended. So I do think that Hendrick Motorsports, and I too, I haven't seen the actual race. This was I saw some replays on social media and listened to SiriusXM. They said Jeff Gordon, clearly he, you can see the frustration on his mouth or face, over the incident. And again, I just think they'd have to stand behind Kyle Larson on this side of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Chase Elliott has kind of gotten by with a few things. I have been frustrated in the past for him not being called out for doing some of the same things that Ross Chastain was doing. He's won races by doing some of the same things that Ross Chastain was doing. And I know Rick Hendrick said something to Ross Chastain, and it's kind of turned Ross Chastain around. He's really taken that comment to heart, and he's really been a little more focused on doing the right thing on the track and making those good decisions, as Danielle Trotta puts it. And she's been really hard on Chastain as well this season, and very complimentary of the fact that he has kind of turned around since that comment from Rick Hendrick. But they need to have that conversation with Chase Elliott. And I agree, it needs to be something internal. They need to sit him down because I think there is a jealousy that's built up here. And Chase Elliott is not handling it very well. Kyle Larson, as we know, is not the kind of driver that likes to get involved in incidents on the track. But he did comment after the race. He thinks once Chase sees the footage, he'll understand what happened there and understand that what he did probably wasn't a good decision on his part. And I think that that's probably true. I think once he sees the footage, Larson had to do something to avoid hitting Brad Keselowski. The problem was he misjudged the distance he had between himself and Chase Elliott, and Chase got hit a little bit there. But it wasn't enough to hurt his race. And I think that, he was able to go on. So Chase Elliott, I think, does have some jealousy going on. That's part of a maturity, I think, and something that he's going to have to deal with and maybe get some help in dealing with that jealousy for all of the reasons that Jay brought up. Because he is making some very bad decisions. It was a bad decision. He got suspended when he had the incident with Denny Hamlin. He's had this, and things are stacking up. Now, this is a good example of first time it's an accident, second time it's coincidence, but by the time you get to that third time, now we're talking about a bad habit that's developing here. So, and for me, I can't think of the specific race, but I know there was a race within the last year that Chase Elliott won that I was a little frustrated because he did exactly the same thing that we've seen some other drivers do in order to win. And yet he's not being called out for it like Ross Chastain was called out for it. So I do think that Chase Elliott needs to have that internal discussion, and he needs to kind of cool his jets just a little bit or come up with a way, some coping mechanisms or something to help him deal with the jealousy feelings that he has going on there. Because it's hurting him, and it's hurting the organization. Mike, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, don't forget there was that race last year at Pocono where Chase Elliott bumped Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch right out of the way, and he stole the win from both of them. Now, granted, he did have the assistance of NASCAR Tech in order to make that happen. But if you were to believe the anti-Chase Elliott contingent on Reddit, that, of course, was a NASCAR conspiracy to give a win to their most popular driver. I'm glad Jay brought up the fact that I don't believe that NASCAR should get involved in this one, even keeping in mind the previous issue that led to his suspension earlier this year. I don't think this incident merits any sort of intervention from NASCAR. This should be an internal deal between Hendrick Motorsports, Chase Elliott, and Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson, like you said, he didn't do anything wrong. And I think Chase Elliott kind of suffered from a lack of perspective on this one, and it led to him doing some ill-advised things. And I'm not sure if it was it Stuart Scott or Stephen A. Smith. One of the guys on ESPN's got the catchphrase, "Come on, man." And that's exactly what we got going on right here. Come on, man. You are the perennial most popular driver of the sport. Like it or not, you are the face of the sport. For better or for worse, because he is not the best face of the sport. He is not a particularly engaging personality. I don't see him going and hosting Saturday Night Live like Jeff Gordon did or really anything else to represent the sport away from the racetrack. But that's a discussion for a completely different thing. He's also a champion of the sport. He won the regular season championship last year. He is not so much this year. He's been a little bit off, but he's a contender for wins on a fairly regular basis. I would be shocked if 2020 was the only Cup Series championship he ends up retiring with, unless he keeps doing dumb stuff like this. Like you said, Sharon, it's a maturity thing, which is weird because usually a driver goes through this dumb maturity phase first, and then they start winning races and championships, I guess Kurt Busch notwithstanding. But either way, most of the time guys get this out of the way first, and then they start winning. Chase Elliott was winning, and then it almost seems like he's decided he wants to be the black hat. He's kind of taken a heel turn this year. I understand this year has got to have been frustrating for the 9 team and Elliott in particular. Chase got hurt early in the season. Not really his fault. I mean, yeah, obviously he decided to go snowboarding, but he certainly didn't decide to go get hurt. That's just, you know, things happen. But we talk about not letting one mistake or one bad circumstance snowball. And I think that's kind of what's happened with this team is Chase has felt like he's behind. He's had, I don't know if it was a chip on his shoulder or how you want to describe it, but it's led to doing things and making strategy calls and doing things on the racetrack, like right rearing Denny Hamlin into the fence, that has continued to set this team back when they were already back in a hole here. So, Is Chase Elliott 100% to blame for the issues that the 9 team has had this year? No, absolutely not. However, he has certainly not done a whole lot to help right the ship and correct it, and this weekend didn't do anything to move him in that direction. Like Andy said, Elliott is not eligible for a driver's championship. However, the 9 team is still eligible for an owner's championship, and every single owner and even race car drivers have said, yeah, the driver's championship is the flashy one, but the owner's championship is what really matters. Now, the 9 team is not, I think they're like 13th or 14th in owner's points right now. They are likely to advance to the next round, but that's not a given. They ran well at Darlington and ran well at Kansas, so barring some sort of really bad time at Bristol, they're unlikely to be eliminated in this round. But either way, if Elliott continues to do dumb things and takes himself out of contention by pulling on one of these dumb moves, he got away with one this weekend, but he could just as easily take himself out in the process like he did at Bristol a few years earlier, racing too hard with Kevin Harvick and cutting a tire down and then doing dumb stuff afterwards. He could very well eliminate his own team from owner's championship contention, and I'm sure that would make Mr. Hendrick and Mr. Gordon very upset with him. So it's time that they step in and say, hey, man, get it together. I know you're going to be with this organization for a long time, but we need you to act like you belong at this organization for a long time, because right now he's not doing it.
Okay. Andy, any follow-up?
Yeah, I just have to, you know, look at where the source of frustration comes from. And obviously, you know, as I mentioned, the first go-around, not really been the year that they want, but it doesn't help matters when your teammates are having a better season than you. When you look at Larson and Byron, they've won a bunch of races, right? And they're easily in the conversation to be championship favorites. And I think, you know, Elliott's kind of used to being kind of the top guy over there. At least he had been for really probably from, say, 2018 through 2020. And then entered Kyle Larson. And it's almost like when Larson came in there, he's kind of been second fiddle to Larson, you know, and now Byron, you know, with five or however many wins inside this year, you know, so you just have to wonder if there's a little bit of frustration. We've seen this with other teams in the past when teammates outperform, you know, one of their drivers, and when they're not able to produce the same kind of results, it can lead to frustrations on and off the racetrack. So certainly when you look at, you know, like I said, the way Larson and Byron have run this year and what they're probably going to do moving forward in the playoffs, you can see where that happens. That being said, I think that we all know the 9 team is capable of having those exact same kind of results as his teammates, and I think that the key for them would be, number one, try to win an owner's championship. Number two, try to learn what you can to go into next season and start things off on the right foot. And so you hope that they can regain that focus required to do that and end the season on a positive note. So I'm sure there'll be meetings. I mean, there's no better ownership group than Rick Hendrick, you know, and now with Jeff Gordon kind of coming in and running the show there. I mean, really, you can't ask for better people than that to try to help corral somebody and steer them in the right direction. And you have to believe that'll take place. But, yeah, it's just been a tough year, you know, and you have to, you know, just look at everything that they've been through. And you can totally see where the frustration comes into play. So I totally understand it. You know, hopefully they'll sit them down and work through it. And, you know, they can do what needs to be done to end the year headed in the right direction.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Yeah, that goes back to all of it. Whenever we talk about a hot topic, it seems like understand where the frustration is coming from. But you also then have to be able to handle that. The pressure, the disappointment, a bad day or whatever. It's how you handle yourself. You know, we talked about Danielle Trotta and her comments, and I know I compared them to Kyle Petty. There were no punches held. When I talked to my mom, she referred to him as kind of compared him to Denny Hamlin of whiny, entitled baby. I don't know if we're to that point yet, but it's trending in that direction from my viewpoint. And this was coming from some within the industry, media and whatnot, that their opinion of him is slowly moving in that direction. And I just hate to see that. You know, whether I think he's the most popular driver as part of the fan base, whatever, I just don't want to see him go down that road. And the other situation we brought up, and this wasn't about on the track, but just being not held to the same standard, if you recall the flipping off on TV. Kyle Busch had done it, a couple of drivers, and they got chastised for it. And I believe it was at Bristol last year, if I'm not mistaken, but Chase Elliott did it on national TV, and he kind of got accolades for it, you know. And there, too, they say, oh, he was mad, you know, he had a right to be. This happened on the track. I'm like, I don't think anybody else flipped somebody off just because it was, you know, the thing to do. They had their frustration and what they were upset about. So I just disagree with that, you know, hold it, whatever the action may be. Sharon, you were pointing it out of comparing it to Ross Chastain. And you're right. If you're going to hold another driver accountable and chastise him for this, darn well better hold yourself accountable when you do it. And that's where the post-race interview with Bob Pockrass, like I said, he was just like, I don't know what you're talking about. What situation? What incident? No, I mean, everybody saw it. At least acknowledge it. And again, you go back and look at the tape, admit that you go, hey, I didn't have the whole picture. I was out of line. Own it. I mean, you know what I mean? Or even if you just say, hey, I was frustrated and I acted out of emotion. Not a good thing necessarily, but at least own it. Don't be like, yeah, what happened? I don't know what you're talking about. I just, that blew my mind.
Yeah, I that kind of blows my mind too, Jay, because it frustrates me when people think that we're stupid enough to buy something like that. We're not that stupid. We see through what you're saying. Having said that, I do think that a lot of these drivers are hesitant to take accountability because of what happened with Denny Hamlin earlier this year when he admitted he took some retaliation out on another driver on the track, Chastain, I think it was, and he admitted it, and NASCAR penalized him for it. So I think this is an example of another example of why drivers are hesitant to say exactly what's going on because they don't want to get a penalty for it. But I think that there does need to be something said about taking ownership for what you did. And he didn't take him out of the race. He let him know. But again, you're using your car as a communication vehicle versus having a conversation. And I don't agree with that. But don't take us for being stupid either, that we're going to believe that, you know, there was no message there. There was a clear message sent, and we all saw it. And for you to say that there was no message just makes you look silly. So I get it to a certain degree, but at the same time, I think he could have owned up to this one without any fear of penalty. But we'll see what happens. That's the only thing I have to add to it. Mike, you get the final word here.
Jay, this may blow your mind with how quickly time flies, but the race that you're referring to where Elliott used the social finger, if you will, that was the Spring Darlington race in April of 2020, the first race back after the COVID break. So it's already been 3 years since that incident that feel like happened earlier this year. Oh, yeah. Time flies, doesn't it? Now, with regard to just using that finger for the sake of using it, you clearly haven't hung around me and my racing buddies and seen some of the pictures we send back and forth to each other, but that's a completely different discussion. But yeah, with regard to Chase Elliott, the guy's, there's no denying he's a very, very talented race car driver, but you've got to look at some of, and I would almost say the majority of the drivers coming into NASCAR, Chase Elliott included, they are the racing equivalent of theater kids. They have been raised in this isolated bubble where the world revolves around them and making them into professional race car drivers. For good or for bad, take that how you will, but they've been in this isolated bubble since before they realized what the world was. I think back to the famous picture of Chase Elliott back in Indianapolis with Dale Earnhardt back in, what was that, like 97, 99, something like that. And Chase Elliott's 5 years old sitting on Dale Sr.'s knee. I mean, that's how isolated into this racing world Elliott has been literally his entire life. And he's far from the only one. The vast majority of drivers at the top professional level, not just in NASCAR, but in all the professional motorsports, they're theater kids. They have been raised and groomed in this environment their entire life. So that's good in that it develops a very, very talented race car driver and a very specialized skill set. But the downside is they do lack that maturity and that worldly experience that people get from doing other things. I call it, you know, whatever that other thing may be. It could just be going to school, you know, regular school with regular kids all the time and getting beat up and stuffed in a locker like I'm sure Ryan Blaney would have been. But you know, having that experience and that life experience, I think they lack a lot of it, and sometimes it shows through. And I think this is my own personal opinion, but I think this is one of those times where that showed through a little bit. I hope he can work through it. I hope, you know, he gets a finger or two poked in his chest by Mr. Hendrick and Mr. Gordon, and they get him right and going in the right direction because, like I said, he's an extremely talented race car driver, has a great potential to win multiple more NASCAR Cup Series championships, but he's got to get his head on straight. And speaking of things that people have to do, Sharon, you're up.
Yes, I am. It's time for me to do my announcement. For our first-time listeners, you will notice we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Tonight, and that's Eastern time. But we are going to continue our conversation past that time, and we will record that part of the conversation so it will be available as part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know that the podcast is available, and at that point, you can fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of our conversation on that podcast. So, again, we make the announcement at this time of the night just so you're not caught off guard or taken by surprise. Now that that's done, we'll go ahead and go to Andy for our next hot topic. What do you have, Andy?
Well, according to Brad Keselowski, he says we need more mile-and-a-half racetracks. What do you think about that?
Okay, Jay.
Well, I think you can go down, Sharon, when you post as far as what we talk about here. You can go down a few more where Mike had put one up of – oh, actually, I think Mike put it up under – I take it back. Mike put it up under race picks. It needs to be moved over to Hot Topics. But he had put up the question of the Charlotte Roval going away back to the mile and a half, Watkins Glen being moved into the playoffs. And we've talked about this, and it includes then the Indy Roval or Indy Road course as well. As this next-gen car now, with the Gen 6 car, yeah, it didn't do well on the mile as well on the mile and a half, seemed to favor the road courses and maybe short tracks a little bit better. The Gen 7 car, it seems, really matches up well with the 1.5-mile tracks. And we've talked about that throughout races throughout the year that it has. And we look back at the Coca-Cola 600 when it comes to Charlotte. So I think there is something to be said about maybe, especially at Charlotte, and going to the, it's not a mile and a half, but oval track in Indianapolis for a couple of reasons. The car seems to be performing better now on these style of tracks than where it wasn't before. Plus, if you're going to add a road course when it comes to possibly Canadian Tire Motorsports Park up in Canada, we've added the street course racing when it comes to Chicago and possibly elsewhere down the road. I think these two manufactured road courses, the Charlotte Roval and the Indy Road Course, do need to go back to something else, the mile and a half or whatever, for two parts. Again, balance the schedule as far as what tracks we're running on and the fact that this car does seem to be doing better on the mile and a half. So I think there is some merit to that, and we know NASCAR is already looking at it, you know, when it comes to the balance, as well as how the car's doing statistically wise and the performance of the racing it's putting on the track. So I think there is something here to look at as we go forward.
Mike?
I'm always hesitant with the we need more whatever kind of arguments, right? Because it always leads to over, you know, too much of a good thing, an oversaturation of whatever. I think we got really close to that with road courses, and I'm a guy who loves road course racing, but at the same time, I agree with Jay that the Gen 7 car has not raced as well on a road course as I think a lot of people, myself included, expected. We saw the development of the Gen 7 car, and it looked a whole lot like almost like an IMSA sports car. Yes, obviously the body panels and whatnot, it still looks like a NASCAR Cup car, but underneath it, the geometry of the suspension, the transaxle layout, all those mechanical things that really make a race car, it looked like a sports car underneath there. And I think we got our hopes up that the Gen 7 car was going to race much better on road courses than so far it has. Now, if you want to blame the aerodynamic package or the driver's skill level, or there's a lot of other factors in play there, so I don't want to point the finger exclusively at the car, but there's really no denying that the road course racing during the Gen 6 era tended to be more entertaining than it has been and during the Gen 7 era. Does that mean we need to completely wipe road courses off the schedule? No, I don't think so. I think it's that style of racing appeals to a lot of race fans, and I think the increase in road course preponderance on the NASCAR Cup Series schedule, I think, has helped to reach a lot more fans who otherwise see NASCAR as just a bunch of cars driving around in circles. I know quite a few people from the sports car world, friends of mine who are big fans of sports car racing, they still don't like watching NASCAR oval races, but they will tune in for the NASCAR road course races. So whenever we have more of those style races on the track, there's a certain number of fans that they will seek out and watch those NASCAR road course races because that's the style of racing that they're interested in. With regard to going to more of a certain type of track, in this case 1.5, this kind of comes down to the fluidity of the schedule. We've seen a lot more change year over year for the past few years with the schedule, and I really like that. Maybe we do need to rotate things a little bit more. So we've got 2.5 miles right now that have been dormant for several years that the Cup Series used to race at, namely Chicagoland Speedway and Kentucky Speedway. To my understanding, aside from a little bit of cleanup, I don't know that there's really anything preventing NASCAR from going back to either one of those facilities. I know there was talk about Chicagoland being bulldozed, but to my understanding, nothing has happened with that project right now. So going back to the Chicagoland Speedway, I think, is probably not too unrealistic, especially with a few months lead time like they would have. Bob Pockrass has said that the Cup Series schedule should be due probably before the end of this month, if not into the beginning of next month. So I would like to see a little bit more rotation there. If not Chicago or Kentucky, something along those lines. Going back to the oval at Charlotte may be something to look at. But keep in mind, the reason that they went to the Roval race and the Fall Charlotte race was because that fall, it was the same thing, same reason that they went to the dirt race at Bristol in the spring. They just were not drawing the audience that they wanted to for that second Charlotte race, the 500-mile race on the mile-and-a-half oval track. So that's why they went to the Roval. Same thing. They were not drawing the audience to the Bristol concrete race in the spring, so that's why they went to the dirt. If they want to go back to the oval track, I think maybe it has rested long enough that there would be a little bit more interest in it, so long as the racing continues to be good. The Coca-Cola 600, both 600s during the Gen 7 era have been outstanding races. So I've got every reason to believe that a oval race at the Charlotte 1.5-mile oval, I think, would be another entertaining and excellent race. However, I do really like the Roval. I think it's a unique idea, and I think the schedule will be losing something by having that go away. Moving away from some of the multi-date racetracks, some of them were traditionally 2 dates, Daytona, Talladega. I think some of those can continue to have 2 dates per year, but some of the other ones, Las Vegas possibly, Phoenix would be another one where maybe instead of a second date there, they go to another, a different racetrack, maybe within the same style. So instead of Las Vegas, maybe we do go back to Chicagoland so we don't lose a mile and a half, but we get a little bit more variety in the schedule from there. That's kind of what I would like to see right there, but I'm real hesitant when I hear anybody, including Brad Keselowski, say, we need more of whatever, because we've seen that road get walked down before and the results have been mixed at best.
Yes, indeed. And I think NASCAR has heard that, and I think they are trying to mix up the schedule a little bit in order to accommodate the style of car and everything else. So I'm sure they're going to hear this as well. I hope you're right. I hope that they do bring back Chicagoland Speedway, Mike. I looked up the website, and there's a Super Motocross World Championship that's going to take place there this weekend. So the track is still there. That's a dirt race, obviously, but I do think that I've seen NHRA still racing there as well. So we know that the facility is still there. Nothing's happened with that facility. If NASCAR could come back to Chicagoland, I think it would be fantastic, because I thought they put on good racing with the Gen 6 car. So it would be interesting to see what they would do in the Gen 7 car, but I've got to think it would be very similar to what we saw at Kansas Speedway. That's the sister track to Chicagoland Speedway. So I've got to think it would be pretty similar racing at Chicagoland. So I like you, though, am hesitant when I hear somebody say we need more of this or more of that, because it does depend on the type of vehicle that they're racing with as well. And I agree with what Jay said, that I think that we can let go of the Charlotte Roval at this point, and perhaps even the road course at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and get back to the regular racing on the track there in both of those facilities. And I hope we don't have any more created road course side of an oval. I would rather we go to a road course track. So I am curious to see what they're going to do with that next year. But I don't think we need more road courses. I think we need probably to hone in and maybe no more than what we have now, certainly, but maybe even a couple of less. So that's my thought on it. I think we have had better racing on the 1.5-mile tracks, and it's one of those, be careful what you ask for, because things can change, and now everybody's wanting the 1.5-mile tracks, where before they were complaining that they were cookie cutters and giving us dull racing. Well, that's not the case anymore. Andy, your thoughts?
Yeah, really to echo what's already kind of been said, you know, it's almost as if, you know, race fans and even drivers, I suppose, aren't content with the current schedule. Years ago, just a few years ago, it was all about how we needed more road courses. And certainly with the previous Cup car, road course races were some of the most anticipated races of the year. To the points that have already been made, though, with the new car, we've seen a bit of a switch where the intermediate tracks, which used to be loathed, I think, by many of us, certainly me anyway, at least some of the facilities, they're now some of the best races of the year, you know. And for whatever reason, the short tracks and road courses, which used to be some of the most anticipated races, are now suffering a bit. So, you know, hopefully, in my mind, instead of completely revamping the schedule and adding a bunch of mile-and-a-half tracks back to the schedule, I would maybe try to find a fix to the Cup car to make short tracks and road courses similar to what we saw in the past, because I do think those are in some of the most interesting racing, you know, events that we see throughout the schedule. But that being said, I think that there is a way where you can, you know, maybe not add more road courses or take road courses away, and maybe don't add a bunch more mile and a half to the schedule, but we could mix up the variety a bit. I'd love to see Chicagoland come back. I think that you have to look no further than Kansas to get an idea what the Gen 7 racing would be like at that racetrack. It would be fantastic. But, you know, I think it's time to maybe take away second dates at some of these events, you know, and start trending toward, you know, maybe having just one race a season at some of these racetracks. And that's not going to include some of the bigger venues like Daytona, you know, Darlington. Some of these others probably deserve one or two dates. Well, at least one date, but some deserve two dates, some of the bigger racetracks. But I would like to see maybe, you know, some racetracks make a return to the schedule. You could potentially add Kentucky and Chicagoland back in, but at the same time, maybe we don't go to Atlanta twice a year. You know, maybe, you know, we don't go to some of these racetracks. I'm trying to think of another one, but Vegas. Maybe we don't go to Vegas twice a year. You know, maybe mix it up a little bit so the mile and a half tracks that we do go to, you know, are all slightly different from each other and give us something to look forward to, you know, going to a different market and a different venue throughout the year. So, I don't know. I think that I don't think it's a bad thing if we revisit the mile and a half talker, but I just know that for years and years and years, people kept screaming that we had too many of them, and I would be hesitant to just go back to that because I think that it would be a mistake. So hopefully, you know, my point would be fix the car so that it races better on short tracks and road courses and maybe make the schedule a little bit diverse. I wanted to touch on real quick about I guess it's a bit of a subtopic, but the fact that Watkins Glen could become a playoff race in favor of the Charlotte Roval going back to the Oval, that I could 100% get on board with. I think it would be fantastic. Upstate New York, you know, I wouldn't go too late in the year, but if you went there in or around, you know, the September time frame, the weather's typically pretty nice. That would be a pretty good move, and I think the Glen would make a great addition to the playoffs, and at the same time, to Mike's point, Charlotte has really produced fantastic racing on the Oval the last year or two, and, you know, maybe having two Oval races there is warranted. I know that contradicts what I just said about maybe not doing so at all these different racetracks, you know, but I do think that some racetracks, you know, like maybe Daytona, Charlotte, Darlington, some of these, you know, prominent racetracks on the schedule, maybe they do deserve two races. I wouldn't want to see it at every venue, but maybe you could do this in periodic places, especially like Charlotte, for example, that really has done a nice job. So I don't know. We'll see what the schedule brings, you know, and we'll go from there. But I guess bottom line, to wrap it all up, I don't really want to see them go crazy bringing back intermediate tracks.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Yeah, I think everybody kind of hit on the same point. So I was going to say I'm going to go through and agree with E20 on some points, but they kind of all got made throughout. Yeah, don't make a knee-jerk reaction. Oh, we want more of this. Let's go boom and go overboard with it. I know Mike used the word of the oversaturation, too much of a good thing. I fully agree with that. Sharon, you brought up with the Roval and the Indianapolis Road Course. I understand Mike pointed out the need for it at the Roval. Again, the racing wasn't great. They weren't drawing the crowd, same as at Bristol. But I've always been a fan of, again, if we go to Canadian Tire Motorsports Park, Road America, Road Atlanta, and there's, I'm not sure of the name, but there's a road course in Virginia. Go to an actual, if you want to get wild and crazy, add Laguna Seca. I know we've talked about that, of just totally mm-hmm. out there, but whether or not it'd work. There are road courses out there. And that leads into then the debate about multiple races at the same track. And that, too, I understand logistics and cost if you only have one race per year, but then rotate it of every other year if you're willing to change the schedule every year. You know, Charlotte gets the 600, loses their date, but then next year they get two races or whatever. And I know there's a lot that goes into it, logistics and cost and, you know, two companies that own majority of the tracks and they're not just willingly going to let one of their dates go, but I think that's something to look at. You know, and there's other tracks, whether you talk about Chicagoland, Iowa Speedway has never gotten a NASCAR date. You could consider that. I know that one gets talked about with the All-Star race before North Wilkesboro stepped in. There's a lot of options. And then lastly, the point from Andy I wanted to, don't now go away from road coursing or short track because the car's not working on it. Work on improving it so that it does match up and find a balance. And that goes back to Mike's original with the way the car was. And I think it was Larry Mack detailed that of the anticipation of it would be a road course racing style car like the Trans Am because the center of gravity, the driver's seat did not go dead center, but it was moved a little more to the right for several reasons that they really did anticipate that being more of a road course style fit. And ironically, somehow it matched up better on the mile and a half now. And we there again, we knew that. And I know I wasn't as harsh a critic, but the mile and a half were suffering. You know, I can't dispute that. I never called any of them a bad race or a sleeper or a snoozer, but there was some improvement needed to be made to improve that, whereas they were good on the short track and the road course. Now it's for whatever reason kind of switched around. Again, don't then go, oh, okay, we're going to go all mile and a half. No, we've been through that. You know, there's a reason we changed away from that and it wasn't working. So don't go overboard and go that way. Continue to work on the car so that it matches up decently on all of them, as good as you can get. I think of it just like Pocono with the three corners. They said you're never going to have the car great in all three corners. Try and get it great in one and then good in the other two. So work on that.
Okay. Mike, your follow-up?
I think really the only good solution here is to expand the schedule to 60, maybe 65 races. Let's do midweek races. I think that's really about the only thing. Let's go everywhere. Let's do everything. Let's make everyone, well, everyone but the teams and drivers. Let's make everyone else happy. Forget those guys. They work for us, right?
They'll be exhausted.
Oh, my, it's a grind as it is. Can you believe it? I mean, just us having to do shows, we wouldn't have time to do shows half the time. We would have too much to talk about. We already do. Anyway, but seriously, when I talk to fans of other disciplines of racing, and inevitably the debate comes out on what type of racing is the best. And of course, I'm in Team NASCAR, always am, always probably always will be. And the biggest point that I make in defense of NASCAR and advocating of why I believe that the NASCAR Cup Series is by far the best, for at least from a fan perspective and racing perspective, the best professional racing series in the world, is because of the variety of different tracks that they go to. You look at a series like Formula One or IndyCar. IndyCar's got a little bit of variety, but Australian V8 supercars, almost every other professional racing series in the world is very limited in the style of racing that they do. Formula One exclusively goes to road courses. IndyCar will go to predominantly road courses with an occasional oval thrown in. Versus you look at the NASCAR Cup Series, they race on intermediate ovals, short tracks, road courses, super speedways. They even have gone to dirt tracks now. And there is no other series in the world where you get that kind of variety as you do with the NASCAR Cup Series. And I would really hate to see too many eggs get shifted into one basket because the car just happens to be better right now. By the time they shift the schedule to capitalize on the strengths that we have right now in 2023, there is a very good chance that the dynamics of that car, for whatever reason, some sort of a rules change, one of the engineers in the back shop of one of the race teams figure something out, whatever it is, by the time they get the schedule shifted and in place, the car and the way that it drives could have completely changed. And now we have warped the schedule to cater to this one style of racing, be it 1.5-mile intermediate tracks, road courses, or anything else. We've completely warped the schedule to revolve around this one style of racing as a fad, and the car has left it behind. And I would really hate to see that, because it puts us in a box like we were really all the way through the mid-90s into probably the mid-20-teens, where NASCAR was just stuck in this rut of a schedule that wouldn't go anywhere. And it was very heavy on the 1.5-mile intermediates, because so much money and time was spent in developing them. And we've finally broken that cycle. And I would really hate for us to see us to fall back into that cycle of, we're going to allow a certain style of racing to dominate it because we have decided that's what we want to do. I think having the variety that we have in the schedule is better for the sport, and it's better for us as fans watching it. I'm excited to see what the schedule is coming up here in hopefully less than a month. I'm sure we're going to be talking about it plenty then, but I hope we get to continue to see the variety that we've seen from the NASCAR Cup Series over the past 5 years or so.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that schedule too. This is the month that typically comes out, so watch for it sometime here in September. I'd be surprised if they let it go all the way to October. So we'll be talking about it soon. I don't have a whole lot more to add. So, Andy, you get the last word here.
Not a lot to follow up on. Just that for your sake, Sharon, just bring back Chicagoland, and I think everything will be okay.
Okay. That means that it's time for Jay. Jay, you got a hot topic for us?
Yeah, we still got a couple that we can talk about, and one of them, since Mike brought up the Elliott one, I'll bring this one up. I'm trying to find it. The actual release parts were on display of what the number 98 truck team did, and Mike's words here, he's on here, he can defend himself, but the 98 truck might have just dethroned Denny Hamlin for the absolute stupidest self-inflicted penalty of the year. They displayed the lug nuts. One of the lug nuts has a valve in it, I guess, that will release air here. Let's see what the illegal Majeski valve.
It wasn't a lug nut. It was a valve stem cap, the little cover that you put on the valve stem when you put air in and out of the tire.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. I was going back to the lug nut deal and the mix-up of the lug nuts. So I'll go ahead and read it. The illegal Majeski valve stem cap from Milwaukee on the right side of the picture, which we have, but comparing to the legal caps, it says NASCAR said they could hear air leaking from the tire in the pre-race tech, and a piece of metal in the center of the illegal one would allow it to eat. They had a part on there designed to release air out of the tire through the valve stem and got caught. And Sharon, I know you just sent me a message. I'm not hearing you right now, but you're obviously not disconnected.
Well, you want to just start the round then?
Yeah. Mike, why don't you go ahead and start? Sharon's apparently having audio issues, but I know she's not disconnected, or we'd all get disconnected. So go ahead, Mike.
So, yeah, you kind of stole my quota. This is the stupidest self-inflicted penalty I've ever seen, ever, ever. I mean, honestly, if you're going to cheat, and I'm not advocating cheating here, but if you're going to cheat with something like that that could easily be removed and reinstalled, why would you ever roll that through tech? That is incredibly dumb. Why don't you roll the truck through tech with legal valve stem covers, have them check the truck, okay, you're good, yay, verily, you're good to go, and then while you're checking the air pressure of the tires before you roll out for qualifying or whatever, you sneaky, you put your cheated up valve stem covers on there after you get done checking the tire pressure. I mean, you got to be smarter than that if you're going to cheat. But I guess the 98 team wasn't, so they got caught and they got penalized. But, yeah, that was I mean, that was a forehead slapper when I saw that one. Maybe there's something here that I'm not understanding, but from my perspective, I've run tech before. I've run my own car through tech before. If you're going to pull games, you got to be smarter than that because you're going to get caught, man.
All right, go ahead, Andy.
Thanks, Jay. Yeah, I got to agree with Mike, and this is something that was mentioned over the weekend in our hot topics. Is if you're gonna go through tech, you probably shouldn't have a valve stem in which the officials can hear the air leaking. So, yeah, huge oversight on their part. Obviously, I put that squarely on the team members, the car chief, whoever is responsible for that truck. I think it would be the car chief. Or the truck chief, I guess, obviously a huge oversight and a huge penalty. And, I don't know about what they've been doing this season, everywhere. Obviously, they were crazy fast at Richmond in IRP. And then it's like when they got caught with that penalty at Milwaukee, it kind of took the wind out of their sails. I don't know what happened to them at Kansas. I have to go back and watch all three races tomorrow, so I guess I'll have a better idea. But they didn't finish very well. I don't know if they had adversity or not. But obviously, that penalty is big, and that could alter their course of the playoffs. I think a couple, 3 weeks ago, they seemed to me like a championship favorite. Now I'm not so sure just because of the fact that they got caught, and they've struggled, in the last two races. So, obviously unfortunate. You don't want to see things like that happen, but it's self-inflicted. They did it to themselves, and obviously, just a tough scenario. So, note to self, if you're going to do that, which you shouldn't anyway, but if you're going to do it, don't get caught.
All right. Well, again, Sharon is having some type of difficulty there, so... yeah, this is one, and you would think, too, if you were going to try something... Obviously, they thought that it was hidden as far as not being noticeable. But you would think, too, that they would have noticed, hey, it's leaking air. We can hear it. If we can hear it, NASCAR can hear it. Don't try it. And especially in the playoffs. And the more I see this, it's kind of caught me off guard of not just if you're in the playoffs and everything, but it wasn't within the tire itself, but attached to it. And, Mike mentioned it when it happened, one of the top three. And, Mike, I know it was tires, engines, and certain parts of the body that you
tires,
just don't
fuel.
Mess with. There you go. That's right. There you go. Fuel. Tires, engines, and fuel. And to me, not only was it not a level one, it was a level two. And they got the low end of the possibility of penalty on the level two. So I really feel like they super got away with it. Again, we talked about the penalty didn't even really hurt them, at least not as of yet when it comes to points, because they got to advance anyhow. I mean, they got away with something there, even getting caught. So that kind of blew my mind, the fact that it was, like I said, it wasn't in the tire itself. It was the add-on to the tire, so it was on that edge. But I think they had to consider themselves very lucky that they weren't just outright removed from the playoffs, because that was really close to treading on those three. So, and like I said, you guys said it, you go through with tech that something's obviously visible or noticeable that they'll find. And if something's making noise that shouldn't be, they're going to look into it. Mike, you get a second round here.
So Andy brings up a really good point about a penalty that seemingly should be isolated to one incident, potentially derailing the momentum for the whole team. Think back to Ryan Blaney back in, I want to say it was 2018, 2019, somewhere in that range. For the first race of the playoffs, that team was found to have illegal ballast or improperly secured ballast. There's always a debate of, did they accidentally leave it in there? Were they caught playing games? Either way,